Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, March 27th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going to go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me here for this midweek edition of the show. Two guests joined me on the program today. The first, Tony George, professional handicapper over at Doc Sports. We're going to chat about Thursday night's Sweet 16 games with Florida State versus Gonzaga, Purdue versus Tennessee, Texas Tech versus Michigan, and Oregon versus Virginia. Then we'll get his thoughts on the last couple of weeks here of the NBA regular season. A lot of teams jockeying for positioning for the playoffs, and of course, a lot of teams looking ahead to the end of the season. Second half of today's show, Wes Reynolds will join me at Wes Reynolds in the number one on Twitter. We'll chat about Friday's Sweet 16 games here, LSU versus Michigan State, Auburn versus North Carolina, Virginia Tech, Duke, and then finally, Houston versus Kentucky. Then we'll talk some WGC match play, get his thoughts, get his strategies, get the guys that he's looking to back and looking to fade here in that tournament. Obviously, it sounded a little bit different yesterday, sounded a little bit different here today. If you've been following me on Twitter, at Skating Tripods, you saw that I was in the Wager Talk studios yesterday doing videos, doing their podcast. Did Dave Coughlin's Las Vegas Sportsline show. Today I'll be on Brian Blessing's show. So doing the show mobile here, wanted to make sure I still got that out for our Bang the Book radio listeners, but that's why I sound a little bit different. And quite frankly, why I may sound a little bit tired here. A whirlwind of a day yesterday, but good hanging out with all those guys and, of course, hanging out with Kelly as well. So good to get some exposure for the betting guide, for Bang the Book, for all the Major League Baseball stuff I've been doing here. And, of course, Major League Baseball season starts tomorrow. Very excited about that, which also means the return of the Bettors Box, my MLB betting podcast, which you'll hear every Monday, Thursday from now, basically until we go back to the full show format in August, once we get some college football and some NFL stuff rolling. But you can look forward to that here on Bang the Book Radio tomorrow with my first edition of the Bettors Box for the 2019 season. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. My daily MLB picks and tips piece will start back up tomorrow with that round of opening day games. A lot of afternoon games, hoping to get that written up here tonight so I can get some lead time on that for the morning, or at least have it up there for you so that you can hop on those afternoon games. Also, daily college basketball picks from Kyle Hunter, daily NHL picks from Parker Michaels. Still covering the NBA, soccer, golf, working on the NASCAR preview here this morning. I'm sure we'll get tennis from Big Ten Watto here soon enough as well. So, we really are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information over at bangthebook.com. So make sure that you check that out. And also check out my betting guide. Check out my season betting tips for each team, players to watch for each team. Lots of baseball content as we look ahead here to the start of the season. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. We start things off with our first guest today. That is professional handicapper Tony George from Doc Sports. Tony, how's it going today, man?
Going good. Didn't know you were in Vegas. Sounds like an exciting time over there at the competitors yesterday. Congratulations. And, of course, anybody listening to this podcast, a personal endorsement. It is a must daily read to check out Adam's stuff in Major League Baseball over at Bang the Book. Always some great takes, Adam, and I take a lot of things you say very seriously over there. And obviously excited, Sweet 16, NBA playoffs around the corner, NIT Final Four, first of the week, Major League Baseball tomorrow. Just an exciting and busy time in the sports handicapping arena, and I'm very geared up coming off my best year ever in Major League Baseball. I know we're talking basketball today, but the boys of summer are back, and I couldn't be more elated, ready to rock and roll there.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to see how you follow up that season. And, of course, you'll make sure you're checking out Tony's stuff over on YouTube. Search Tony George and Doc Sports. I'm sure you'll have plenty of free picks and plenty of free advice here during the Major League Baseball season. I guess you mentioned the NIT, CBI, CIT, and I think people have probably forgotten that that's still going on with everyone focused on the Sweet 16 games. Three of those games tonight, a handful of them last night. Again, still some value to be had in those lesser postseason tournaments.
Yeah, how about Greg Marshall last night taking the Wichita State Shockers into number one seeded Indiana and winning straight up as an underdog, and TCU took care of business against Creighton. Just a little bit too much defense, and Creighton couldn't hit the bull in the ass a handful of rocks. I found some value in the Marshall and Presbyterian game on the under 168. And, you know, I started out, you know, last week, Adam, Thursday and Friday, with just not good days. But, you know, doing this 27 years, we watched, we learned, we paid attention. And since then, we've been on a nice little 5-6-2 run, actually. And case of some of these smaller tournament games. And tonight provides, you know, some more opportunity. You know, half of the Final Four now has been set, with Wichita State and TCU advancing to the NIT Final Four in Madison Square Garden. And you got a couple of really good games tonight, one of them which we're on, the Colorado-Texas game. And obviously there's one more game that my mind, I'm brain farting right now. It's Escapo Lipscomb, who I've won a bunch of money on this year, catching four at North Carolina State. You know, so before you gear up and worry about the big boys, don't forget there's some opportunity with the little boys yet here in college basketball. We found some great value there with the home road dichotomies and, you know, offensive and defensive rankings at home and on the road, and we found some good spots there in the NIT. We got another good one for you tonight.
Yeah, I wish I would have been able to spend a little bit more time on those, you know, but last week with the first and second round and all the all-day basketball, the early games, stuff like that, hard to find time to talk about everything. But you know, you mentioned last night, Presbyterian and Marshall, bad travel spot for Presbyterian, third road game in a week. You've got, you know, Coastal Carolina and DePaul tonight, third game in a week for both of those teams, two of them on the road here for Coastal Carolina. So a lot of good situational spots, travel advantages, scheduling dynamics here in the CIT and the CBI, definitely things that you want to file away in the back of your mind for next season, to say the least. But, Tony, let's talk about the Sweet 16 here. We go to Thursday night. Florida State and Gonzaga, we'll just roll through these games here in chronological order as opposed to rotation order. Florida State and Gonzaga, I mean, this is a Final Four-level game in the Sweet 16 with Gonzaga, 7.5-point favorite, total 146.5.
Right, and, you know, Seminoles without Phil Coffer, his dad passed away. I think this is going to be a very, very good basketball game. And don't forget that the Seminoles last year beat Gonzaga when they were missing a player, and they beat them by 15 points. This time around, obviously, I think Tilly was the guy that was out for Gonzaga last year, and this time around, Bulldogs are healthy, and they're a good basketball team, obviously. 5-5 against the spread on the road here. I just think that I really think that one thing you're going to need to look at, just overall in the Sweet 16, no matter what game we're talking about, this pretty much is going to be the theme. Points are at a premium. You know, anybody laying over 4 or 5 points in this thing, you want to start taking a really good look at the underdog. Leonard Hamilton's got a good basketball team. I'm a little – they don't play a lot of defenses in non-conference games. They're 6-0 this year in non-conference games on the overs here. And, of course, you've got the dichotomy of Gonzaga being 5-1 their last 6 non-conference games on the under. But the one thing about Gonzaga – they play some defense in the tournament. The under is 11-5 in the Bulldogs' last 16 NCAA tournament games here. I'm thinking maybe this is going to be kind of a tight one, close to the vest. 146.5 might be a little high in this one.
Yeah, we have seen this total come down a little bit from 148.5 to 146.5. So, you know, we do see a lot of public line moves in terms of the spreads on these games. But certainly early week moves on the totals are going to be sharper in nature. So it sounds like somebody out there does agree with your assessment here. What about that revenge angle? Because I've heard a lot of different things here this week, you know, especially being out here in town, that, you know, some people say it matters. Some people say, look, if you're not motivated for the Sweet 16 anyway, you probably don't deserve to be there. So how much do you think that's incorporated, not just into the line, but into the mindset of people here, knowing that these two teams just met, you know, last season, and that Florida State was the one who came out victorious?
Well, you know, you got to look at play. It does play 99% of the time. This is the 1% of the time it doesn't play because, Adam, so precisely you hit the nail on the head. If you're not motivated and come out with focus and intensity in the Sweet 16, then you're poorly coached. You don't need added motivation. I mean, obviously Gonzaga's got a little bit here, but Gonzaga just carries a premium number. You know, they're always put a big number on them because they're a public darling to bet. If you look at their last 12 NCAA tournament games, they've only covered three of them. And they stuck a number here, seven and a half, seven, somewhere in that area right now. And then you take a look at what Florida State's done. Their last 14 neutral site games, they've covered, they're 9-3-2 against the spread. I just think this is going to be one of those games where neither team's going to go away and quietly in the night. And if it gets to be lower scoring, which I think it will, it definitely brings those points into play despite the revenge factor. Both teams are going to come out with focus and intensity, and this is going to be a knockdown, drag-out game. And, you know, Florida State likes to get physical. Obviously, Gonzaga is extremely well-coached. I mean, let's not bony smoke up anyone's ass here. But at the end of the day here, they're not used to facing teams like this, as physical as Florida State can be. They kind of try and manhandle you. And at the end of the day, I don't think the revenge plays into it as much as it would, say, if they were conference opponents and Gonzaga had went on the road, you know, like they got beat by St. Mary's, you know, in the conference tournament final here in Las Vegas, a game that I went to. But if that would have happened in the regular season, if Gonzaga would have went on the road and got beat 60-47, you better bet the next time around, if they were playing at home, getting St. Mary's, it'd blow them clear out of the stadium like they did in the regular season by 48 points. But at the end of the day, this is not that scenario. This is a year removed. It's not. It obviously, it's fresh in the mind somewhat, but not like a conference loss. I don't think it plays that much. I think you got to take a look at it for what it is right here, right now.
All right, so we talk about the first game on the board here by rotation number for Thursday night, Purdue and Tennessee. This is interesting. Tennessee, 1.5-point favorite, mostly market-wide. Bovada, very public shop, as we all know. They're the only ones out there on the board with the -2 in the offshore market, which would imply that Tennessee certainly looks like the public side here in this game. Really, Tony, as I look at this matchup, as I look at what's going on in the betting market, I don't think too many sharp individuals have – tip their hands on this game yet.
Well, I'll tip it for you. You want me to tip it for you, Adam?
Absolutely. If you want to, go right ahead.
I put $500 on Tennessee at 15-1 to win it all. That's what I think is going to happen in this ball game. I think Purdue is, of all these teams left, I think they're a pretender. As Edwards go is how they go. And I think Tennessee is, it can be the only detriment to Tennessee is their head coach. I stated this on your show on more than one time this year, that Rick Barnes has never, ever been able to win the big one. Just has not been able to pull it off. From his days at Texas, you know, through now, he has a team. It's kind of, you know what they remind me of, Adam? They kind of remind me of Texas when Mack Brown was there. Winning you a lot of games, but getting the big one and can't pull the trigger until he had Vince Young. And Vince Young won that game by himself, basically, against USC when they won the title. But they've got Schofield here, which is a great player. I think they're talented across the board. They do everything extremely well, and they're very consistent at doing things extremely well. I just think that this is one here where I thought the line would be 4 or 5, and I was shocked that they weren't. I think Purdue's in big trouble here. I really do. You know, I mean, and I know that Tennessee blew a big lead against Iowa, but that's a good thing. They got into overtime with Iowa because they left their foot off the throttle and dropped their intensity, and that's a learning lesson along the way. And I think a lot of people remember them getting blown out by Auburn in the SEC championship game. But bear in mind, Tennessee slayed the Dragon the game before against Kentucky, and that was a letdown. And that's the game they really wanted anyway. So I think Tennessee's a clear-cut going to be a clear-cut winner here.
I think what's interesting here is, you know, again, we talk about how much influence the public has in March Madness, and they certainly have a lot of influence here in the Sweet 16 as well. You talk about narratives. You talk about things that kind of shape the market. You know, you've got a Purdue team here along with Michigan and Michigan State, you know, three teams from the Big Ten still in the tournament. But the SEC has shown very well. You know, Florida had the upset over Nevada. They still have Tennessee. They still have Auburn. They still have Kentucky. They still have LSU left standing here in this thing. I think that's kind of interesting. And maybe a little bit of a driving force behind the preference for Tennessee here is that I think the SEC getting a little bit more respect maybe than the Big Ten here in this tournament. And it's sort of akin to bowl season where, you know, if you've got a conference that starts out really well in the bowl games, those remaining conference members get a little bit of love. Whereas if you have a conference that doesn't do so well, people are kind of lining up to fade those teams down the road. So I think that's an interesting angle to this game that, you know, I'm curious to see how that continues to drive the market.
Yeah, and it kind of flip-flopped on the Big 12, didn't it? They started out looking really good in the tournament, and they all just fell flat on their face come round two, and where the SEC's been relatively dominant. You know, obviously, one thing about the SEC, you know, the one, if you look at all the futures left on the 16 teams, LSU's in dead last at 75-1, which surprises me a little bit. You know, this is a team, obviously, we know about their coach, you know, basically getting fired. He's suspended without pay. He's fired. He broke the rules. Let's not kid anybody, you know. But at the end of the day, you know, for them to continue to play the way they have, you know, despite, you know, if anybody in college basketball has an off-court distraction or something that, you know, of that nature, it definitely, you know, in my opinion, is LSU, and they have been able to prevail despite that, you know. And obviously now they're running into, you have a coach with a little experience, you know, we'll talk about the Friday game, but they're going up against Tom Izzo, so they're catching a bunch of points. We'll see what happens, but, you know, at the end of the day, the SEC is a very strong basketball conference, and Tennessee's one of the better teams in there, along with Kentucky, and they're all still standing. And you know, the numbers reflect that, except with LSU as well.
Well, and on the flip side here, we move on to the next game, again, going chronologically here, Texas Tech and Michigan. Michigan, 1.5 or 2-point favorite, depending on where you look. The sharper of the offshores, Pinnacle, Bookmaker at 1.5. Some of the more public shops, Bovada, BetOnline, -2. So, again, maybe tipping your hand a little bit here in terms of what we're seeing in the betting market from the public. But, you know, Tony, Texas Tech, the only Big 12 team left standing. The thing is, they're the best Big 12 team. So it does make some sense.
It does make some sense, and I'm really going to reserve comment on this one. I did get a chance to email you. This is my NCAA tournament game of the year. So I'm not really going to tip my hand on this one, but I got a very, very strong opinion on this. Probably this is my strongest opinion of the tournament. Obviously, I haven't seen the Elite Eight and the Final Four, but those numbers are usually sharp. But I think there's a clear-cut advantage for one team in that game, Adam, and I'm going to go ahead and yank the trigger on this one, give my clients a big seven-unit play here.
No, that's perfectly fine, completely understandable. The one thing I do want to touch on here is, you know, we talk about Florida State and Gonzaga, and we talk about Mark Few being a great head coach, Leonard Hamilton, great recruiter. Maybe he's a better coach than we've given him credit for here on the show. We talk about Matt Painter,
right,
and Rick Barnes, two guys that, you know, don't know their asses from a hole in the ground in the NCAA tournament. You've got, I mean, this is a premier, you want to talk about Final Four level coaching matchups. Chris Beard and John Beilein, it doesn't get much better than that.
No, it's a couple of good coaches and a couple of good teams going at it. There's a couple of keys in real tight games like this that you look, and this one here, all the stars lined up for me. But, you know, and that's one thing we haven't touched on other than me mentioning the fact that Rick Barnes is, you know, is terrible. But, you know, he's just got a team. He may be like Mac Brown did, and when Texas beat USC, he just has such a good team that it can overcome some of those deficiencies. That being said, you really need to take a look at coaching right now. You know, just like I mentioned in the LSU Michigan State game, you just got an assistant, been made a head coach, and now you've been tasked with getting your team in this position, and now you're coming up against one of the legendary coaches in college basketball in Tom Izzo. And I will tell you, that's a mismatch on paper right there. Before you even start looking at stats, numbers, man-to-man matchups, all the efficiency rankings, you got to take a look at the coaching as well. And it's going to be a difficult task for a coach going up against a Tom Izzo or, you know, John Calipari or Mike Krzyzewski or Roy Williams. You know, these guys aren't intimidated. Their team isn't intimidated by being there because they're well coached. They're coached up for these type of games. They're, as a matter of fact, you take teams like the big ones we talked about, Adam, with this coaching. They've been coached and groomed the entire season since they started playing, you know, Tallahassee JUCO in the preseason, you know, in the non-conference schedule. You know, they've been groomed and prepped to be in this position they are in right now, so nothing surprises them and they don't get the deer in the headlights routine because of that coaching. And that does come into play here in the Sweet 16 moving forward.
All right, we got one more game to talk about here on Thursday. And, you know, if you like offense, if you like up and down basketball, this is not the game for you. But it should still be a very interesting one between Oregon and Virginia. And we are seeing this total go up a little bit, from 118 to 119 and a half or so. So, you know, obviously, I mean, this is a very, very low total for any college basketball game. So not a big surprise to see money hitting the board on the over. Spread in the 8.5 range, pretty much market wide out there. Virginia the favorite. And, you know, this is one where we kind of have to ask ourselves. When we talk about Tony Bennett being a very good head coach, we talk about what Virginia's accomplished in conference play in the ACC. When it comes to the tournament, Virginia has some issues. And you sort of wonder here, you know, was this line intentionally set in this 8.5 range? Are the odds makers telling us something here? Or are people just not ready to buy into Oregon? It's a strange game, I think, for me. This is one where I really can't explain why the line is where it is.
Well, it's public perception. There's a couple of things at play here. Number one is, a perceived low-scoring game, which this is going to be a grind-out game, brings points into play. And Oregon's getting a bunch of them. Really are. And I will tell you something about this game. We talked to coaching. When I was in Lincoln, Nebraska, lived there for 25 years, did radio in Lincoln, Nebraska for almost 10 years, I had the opportunity to host the Dana Altman Show. And he was over in Omaha running Creighton at the time when they were in the Mo Valley. And Dana Altman is a class act and a tremendous, tremendous basketball coach. He put Creighton on the map, dude. I mean, this guy can flat out coach, won a bunch of Mo Valley titles, had him in the Sweet 16 with lesser players in terms of talent, and yet we're beating teams with that talent, you know, that the talent level that he had. He was beating some of the big boys, and he took on all comers. They tried to schedule big schools like Kansas and back in the day. Dana is a great head coach, and he'll have his players coached up. But the other things at play here is now you have a momentum killer, which concerns me, because Virginia is well coached. They're an extremely good basketball team. Unlike years past, they have a threat on the perimeter. A couple of threats on the perimeter where they're able to knock down threes and get on a roll, scoring points, which before they just grind you out 61 to 55, you know, 58 to 47 type ball. They're not that team this year. They've expanded a little bit, especially offensively, which is a good job of coaching. But at the end of the day, nobody hotter than Oregon. But now you have this break. You know, and that can be a momentum killer, and that's a concern there, because I will tell you that Virginia is the more talented team in this matchup.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, and something I haven't heard too many people talk about, so I'm glad you brought that up. You know, it's one of those things, you talk about maybe going into the All-Star break or something like that in another sport, where you don't want to stop playing. You're in a good rhythm.
No.
You're in a good groove. You know, you're everything is working the way it should be. You know, really offensively and defensively for Oregon, because they've really maximized their offensive possessions as well, playing all these slow tempo games. You don't want to stop playing. So I think it's an excellent point that you made there, and something, you know, not really being considered. And, you know, again, like you said, the low total, implies points in play, which is why this line does look high. But again, I mean, they don't keep building these huge places that people are staying in out here because odds makers are idiots.
No, no. And, you know, as much as I love Dane Altman and respect him, you know, just because I had, I wouldn't say a personal relationship, but a business relationship with him and had opportunities to visit with him over the years, you know, off camera, so to speak, for lack of a better term. I think this could be the game for them where the rubber meets the road. Now, if it goes according to script, as we alluded to, in a very low-scoring, grinded-out game, Oregon's got a real shot at covering this game. I would be dutifully shocked if Oregon was able to pull off straight-up win here. I really would. I think Virginia is that good. They can be. You know, like you said, it is a very interesting game because it's got a lot of different storylines, you know, at play. But catching 8.5, if you look, 67% of the money's went on Oregon. You know, I right now they haven't – the public really hasn't been duped into laying it with Virginia here. But Virginia with three losses this year, you know, this year, you know, the one thing that would put me on, and I'm going to stay away from this game. I'm just going to watch it. I'm not going to get near this one, you know, because Oregon's putting up more points their last five games, and they are allowing 57 points per game. And if you take a look at Oregon across the board, 71 points per game versus 68, 47% from the floor versus 46, 42%. Versus 34% for three-point range. Free throw, 75% versus 68%. They're better in rebounding, 59 rebounds a game versus 54. You know, against the road, away from home, Oregon's 12-8 against the spread. You know, and, of course, Virginia's 14-4. But at the end of the day here, you know, if you took a look at the stats and didn't see the line, and didn't know this was a Sweet 16, and you took a look at the stats that I just gave you, and then circle the team, you'd circle Oregon. Then you look at the line and see they're catching 8.5, and you think, wait a minute, there's a weasel in the woodpile somewhere. So that's one of those games I'm going to stay away from and just sit back and watch. But I think Oregon can compete here.
Last thing I want to ask you about here, Tony, you're having a great season in the NBA. It's been very profitable for you, certainly looking at the first halves especially, you know, something you've talked about a lot here on the show. We got about 2 weeks left of the NBA regular season. So teams jockeying for playoff position, teams trying to get into the playoffs, and then teams just kind of looking forward to this thing being over, going on vacations, all that type of thing. So does anything change for Tony George because we only have 2 weeks left in the season and, you know, even more extreme variance in motivation levels than we usually have?
Well, you have extremes on both sides of the spectrum. And tonight, I've only had, I think, six first half line play losses the entire season. We're up 112 units. I think we're up like $8,700 for a $100 player with my NBA package. I'm having one of my best NBA years of the year. Last year, I finished at plus 78 units and ranked ninth in the country, and I've already surpassed that. I've done that being very low volume, one play a day. As a matter of fact, on a first-half line play tonight, there's a game involved. I have my game of the month, a big six-unit play tonight with another first-half line play where I had Denver last night first-half line in a scenario where Detroit has been on the road and Denver, you know, coming off a loss against Indiana. Well, guess what? Detroit scored 9 points in the first quarter. It was an easy first-half line win. But at the end of the day, the teams where the games matter – is playoff atmosphere right now. It really is. The teams that are right in the hunt, say in the top eight, maybe one out of ninth or whatever, one out of eight, you know, one game out, you know, these games matter. The stats don't lie. You can count on these teams showing up. The other ones, you avoid like the bubonic plague, and which means this. If you're spreading it around with more than one wager a day in the NBA, you've got to find a game with some meaning and handicap those stats and then look at the situational analysis, which is what we're doing here in my program over at Doc Sports. Now, There's about 2.5 weeks left in the season, seven or eight games for a lot of these teams. There's going to be days now where I'm going to pass. You wait for the playoffs. You don't get greedy this time of year. My build-up, it takes a hell of a lot of work to build up 112 units for a season to the good. I'm not going to start blowing it all away here the last 2.5 weeks. I don't put out selections for sale just to sell picks. I try and sell winners. And we've done that consistently in the NBA all year, and I'm not going to change my philosophy now. If it's not there, we're not going to take it. I would probably be surprised, Adam, if I put out any more than 5 or 6 plays, including tonight's play, between now and the end of the season. And I'll live to fight in the playoffs. So my advice would be, don't spread it around. Stay low volume. If something doesn't look tasty, don't take it. If it looks too tasty to be true, don't take it. Expect the unexpected with all these other teams. Players, star players that are banged up aren't going to give 100%. They may even sit them. Coaches are looking at, you know, that aren't on the hot seat, are probably going to look at their bench a little bit here the last couple of weeks when games don't matter, and take a look at some players that haven't played that much this season and see how they may fit in or not fit in moving forward. So it's a very dangerous landscape right now, and you got to be careful. Stay low volume.
Tony George, professional handicapper over at Doc Sports. What's going on over there right now, Tony?
Well, as I mentioned, we've got a huge play tomorrow in the Sweet 16. We've hit, I think, 6 out of our last 8 in college basketball, and the NBA has been steady. Only 3 back-to-back losing cards in the NBA since December 28th of 2018. That's documented. We got a 35% off special over there. When you go over there at the website and click on my name, you'll find my packages on the right-hand side of my page. We have a promo code called TGNBA35. You just type in that promo code and get 35% off the rest of the year, including all the playoffs in the NBA. Gets you about $65 a month for one of the top-rated NBA cappers around, Adam. And, you know, I don't blow my horn a lot on your show. I haven't all year. I never do. But we're having a hell of a year, and you get 35% off. That's TGNBA35, and it's posted on the site, too, on my page, what the promo code is. And, of course, baseball. We've got a big early bird discount over there for that, plus 146 units last year in Major League Baseball. Fired up about that. And the only thing I'm not looking forward to is saying that this is our last show until August together. But other than that, a lot of good stuff going on over there at DocSports.com.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I've appreciated having you on the shows here over the football and the basketball seasons. And as you mentioned here, you know, we'll be transitioning our format next week, changing things up quite a bit. So, Tony, thank you so much, man. I appreciate your flexibility over the course of the season to move some things around at times as well. And thank you so much, man. Best of luck this baseball season.
All right, Adam. Take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you in August.
There you go. There's Tony George, professional handicapper, over at Doc Sports, at T George Sports on Twitter. And make sure you check him out for baseball season here as well. Well, as we talked about, the Sweet 16 begins tomorrow night. 4 games Thursday, 4 games Friday. No better time to head on over to PropSwap.com/BTB. See what's going on over at PropSwap. See what's available out there in the marketplace for not just these NCAA tournament futures, but also some NIT futures. You've got, you know, Major League Baseball props and futures. You've got NBA futures and props. Lots of stuff posted over there for you to check out. Sellers offering better prices than you could find out there in the marketplace at, you know, any offshore, any brick and mortar. Buyers looking for good opportunities at this time of the year. So head on over to PropSwap.com/BTB. See what's available. Get involved. Guarantee some profit on your futures. Pick up some futures here for the rest of the tournament and the NBA and NHL playoffs as well. Once again, PropSwap.com/BTB. We got one more guest here for this Wednesday, March 27th edition of the show. That is Wes Reynolds, at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Adam, good morning, man. How are you, sir?
Doing very well, bud. Appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me. Let's dive right in here with Friday's Sweet 16 matchups. And, you know, as we're recording this show here, LSU, Michigan State, first game on the board chronologically. Again, we'll go chronological here with these. Pinnacle and Matchbook up to 6.5. looks like we're starting to see that Michigan State money we've all kind of been waiting for.
Yeah, and I think it's probably going to continue primarily to be one-way traffic there. When you look at the fact that obviously bettors are looking at how the Big Ten has done so far, and they've done very well in this tournament, and also the fact that, you know, you do have Tom Izzo in the NCAA tournament in March against Tony Benford, who's, of course, kind of the interim coach right now at LSU. So people are looking at that as a coaching mismatch, and it probably is. This is something that I think when you look at what, you know, whenever you have these sportsbook directors or managers or heads of operations of these books, and they're going to tell you, yeah, we're going to need LSU. I mean, they're telling you the truth. They're going to need LSU. And, I think Michigan State is going to be in a lot of money line parlays. People are going to take them because it's below 7. LSU, if it got to 7, 7.5, might interest me actually a little bit because I think they're kind of a little bit of the disrespected team because of everything that happened with Smart's eligibility and obviously Will Wade being suspended, for the wiretaps and everything that they found. So I think you're going to see, a lot more Michigan State money. But this LSU team, let's keep in mind, this team did win the SEC in the regular season. They were the one seed in the SEC tournament. And that's no small feat. I mean, this team went to Rupp and won. This team beat Tennessee at home in that double, I think it was double overtime game. So this is a very capable team. And they're probably being a little bit disrespected here in the line. I mean, in terms of getting involved, I really would like to have 7 with them. And I think if it can get there, and I think it might at least in a couple places, I would tend to lean to the LSU side at that number.
Yeah, it does seem like we're going to get there. And that's an excellent point about the SEC. And I talked about that a little bit with regards to the Purdue and Tennessee game in the previous segment there with Tony George, that the SEC still has 4 teams standing, and LSU is one of them. And it was a very, very strong conference here over the course of the season. So this is a team with talent. And to see how one-sided everything is on this game, and anytime you get a game that's extremely one-sided, regardless of the sport, you're going to have people that just say, you know what, this isn't really a business where everybody wins. You know, when you get these one-sided games, a lot of times people do say, you know what, I want to take a shot on the other side. So I am curious to see what the stopping point is for this number. Sounds like maybe you think it's 7. Maybe we see a stray 7.5 in a very public book, something like that. But usually when you get these games where everybody's on one side, for one reason or another, it doesn't wind up working out for the consensus.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, too, that we've seen, and I don't usually like to handicap this way, and I don't recommend it necessarily, because I think, sometimes teams see dogs cover, and then, they want to gravitate toward the favorites and think it's going to balance out, and sometimes maybe it does. But you will see after you've had 4 days of action, and you have in 3 of the regions, you have the 1, 2, 3, 4, in the regional semifinals in the Sweet 16. So, I mean, from a seeding standpoint, it's been a chalky tournament. And, some people are going to be creatures of habit and kind of, I think, go with that. And that doesn't mean, okay, now take all of every underdog out there, necessarily, because it's going to, totally regress to the mean. I mean, some years are going to be dog tournaments. Some years are going to be chalk tournaments. And that perhaps this may continue, but I do think that there are casual bettors that will look at that. Casual bettors love the trends, and that use that as a sole base for their handicapping, which I think it was a mistake instead of, using it as a tool for sure. But, they will go with that. And that's why, I mean, the LSU would interest me. But with these numbers, I mean, these numbers are relatively tight. So you're very rarely, just because the final score may be off and have a discrepancy, you're very rarely going to get a number that's probably going to be off if you're doing power rating that's going to be off that much. So, when you talk about, line value, at this time of the year, you're not going to get a lot of it. And really what you have to go on, I think, is a lot of instinct and a lot of psychology and maybe just styles of play. And you're really going to be focusing more on that than necessarily you are on line value per se.
Well, another thing that's really intriguing about this game, and I've broken this game down a lot here this week, obviously you've got the Izzo factor, which is really hard to quantify. I mean, we don't know exactly how much that's worth to the line. I've heard anywhere from 3 points. I've heard some people say that, you know, it's a 6-point advantage and that this game would be a pick'em if Will Wade was the coach there for LSU. You know, and you look at this game schematically, you look at it from a matchup standpoint, LSU has to get to the rim. Over 14% of their 2-point offense on dunks. Sparty doesn't let that happen. Under 5% of opposing 2-point offense on dunks. Sparty's fourth in the country in field goal percentage against at the rim on dunks, layups, and tip-ins. So, you know, if LSU wants to get to the rim, this is not the team that you can usually do it against. So you factor in that, the schematic advantages for Michigan State. You factor in the coaching advantage. This line has been up for 3 days, and it really hasn't moved off of 6. That's kind of a telling thing to me, too.
Yeah, exactly. And also looking at LSU, I mean, putting aside Michigan State's, first game against Bradley, because a lot of these favorites, if you look in the first round, especially a lot of the real premium teams, the Dukes and the Virginias, North Carolina, those teams are all down at the half to 16 seeds or 15 seeds. And Michigan State kind of fell in that same category and, you know, pulled away late, but it was a relatively competitive game for a 215. And then they came out the next game and buried Minnesota. And I mean, Minnesota couldn't do anything. I think they were like 2 of 22 from the three. So, I mean, you know, obviously Michigan State would prefer you shoot threes on them all day long. And then you had an LSU team that didn't cover either game. Maryland was nip and tuck. Maryland had a chance to win at the end. I was fortunate to have three there. But, LSU didn't cover either game. But overrated in sports handicapping is just looking at ATS records. Because as ATS records get good, and sometimes teams have really good years against spread and sometimes they don't, but as these ATS records mount up, the odds makers look at that. And they're going to say, okay, this team is covering a lot of games, and maybe they're going to shade a line a half a point or a point. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, you're seeing a team against the spread and then you go bet it at the window. It's not like those guys in the back room or behind the counter don't know that. So, I think if people are looking at it that way, that's the wrong way to go about it. But, yeah, I do think LSU, you know, they're a team that I think, they're not a team that's going to beat you necessarily shooting the three ball. They're going to beat you driving to the basket with Waters and Smart, and they're going to, you know, try to get to the rim and get to the foul line. But for me, in terms of a matchup, it isn't a play I'm sure of, like on from a pure matchup standpoint. But it's more of looking at the number. I mean, this would be me not necessarily taking a side, but taking a number if I could get LSU 7 or north of that.
All right, so let's look at the next game on the board here, Auburn and North Carolina. And I got to say, man, seeing a 5-point move on a total this late in the season with how sharp these numbers, you know, tend to be, it's pretty telling here. So North Carolina, 5-point favorite. Total, in fact, at bookmaker all the way up to 165.5, up from 160. So, you know, if you're looking at a high-scoring game here, which is certainly what the expectation appears to be, makes Auburn kind of intriguing, but they are such a high-variance team.
Yeah, and the thing about it, I mean, and a lot of that, it probably will continue to move up a little bit until you eventually see some buyback maybe a few hours before the game on the under when you got Bruce Pearl on the SVP show saying, hey, take the over, you know, because it's going to be a high-scoring game. I mean, but I'm a little more interested in the side here, and I actually like Carolina in this spot. And I know Auburn, you know, the tendency is kind of take the hot team, and they – fell short of expectations, and then they caught fire late in the season, won their last three regular season games, and then won the SEC tournament. And I thought they had a good chance to do that and had a future on them at 5-1. But they are a high variance team. And the thing is, they play this, you know, a little bit herky-jerky, if you want to call it that, style with, you know, a lot of backcourt pressure and speeding up the tempo and shooting a lot of threes. But I think it's almost like they play North Carolina style of basketball, but I think North Carolina basketball plays better North Carolina style of basketball than Auburn does. And I think, you know, when you get to a team that is used to playing that style, and I think even though Auburn, I think, has good personnel, I think Carolina, you know, is a little bit deeper and has a little bit better personnel. And, I mean, they are, you know, it's so, I guess, profound, but I think, you know, they're just the better team here, and they're used to playing that style. And I think Auburn a little bit, they might be the little less disciplined team of the two teams that play this style. Because you see Auburn, they gamble for a lot of steals. Carolina does too, but maybe not as much. So, I mean, if it comes down to discipline, I think Carolina is a little bit more of the disciplined team. I think that the number probably is right, but I would still lean with North Carolina in the spot.
And of course, North Carolina should have a big advantage on the glass here in this game as well. And, you know, that will certainly help them if Auburn's not making those distance jumpers. And something that I kind of want to touch on here a little bit, I don't think I've heard this angle talked about too much here this week. And, you know, obviously everyone's kind of beating these games to death, but you've got Duke, you've got Virginia, you know, two teams that got talked about a ton in the ACC. You've got Florida State getting talked about a lot here for their athleticism and length in their game against Gonzaga. Is it possible that North Carolina is just underrated, underappreciated, undervalued? Because I feel like for being a number one seed and a team that was, you know, one of the top ones on the board for the futures market, I feel like nobody has talked about this team this year. And it sort of makes me wonder if, you know, there's maybe a little bit of hidden value here in that people don't really realize how good this team is.
You know, and I think, and I'm probably guilty of being one of those people that have undervalued them a little bit, because I look when they asked, who do you think the first one seed that's going to go out? And I thought it might be them. And I think it was because, you know, when people talk about selecting NCAA tournament teams and these analysts on TV talk about eye tests, I saw them in person on Thanksgiving night at the Orleans Arena in Las Vegas. They were in that Continental Tire Las Vegas Invitational doubleheader, and they played Texas in the first game, UCLA and Michigan State were the second game. And, you know, it's not that Carolina was bad. I mean, they were surely explosive, but they kind of got really – it's not – I'm making up a word here, but they kind of got out-physicaled by Texas. So that gave me the perception, you know, seeing that in person – that, hey, this team's a little soft. And then I saw Louisville do it to them in Chapel Hill, where they led wire to wire as 12-point underdogs. So, you know, that was my perception, and that's why my perception personally was down on North Carolina. But I just think that their draw, you know, the draw is so key in this tournament. I think it really set up for them. I mean, they had a team in Washington that plays primarily zone. Well, Carolina sees this zone against Syracuse at least once a year. So, you know, they were obviously prepared for it. They weren't going to get tricked by that Q-esque 2-3 zone that Mike Hopkins runs and learned under Jim Boeheim all those years on his staff. And then, you know, getting an Iona team that's a mid-major team that likes to run up and down the floor, well, that was very comfortable for North Carolina. They're like, okay, you know, we can come out and, you know, play our B or C game and still beat this team. You know, and then they get Auburn that wants to play kind of their style, that's not exactly wanting to slow them down. So, you know, they've gotten a favorable draw here. And, I mean, it's hard for me to not see a North Carolina-Kentucky regional final. And that's no disrespect to Houston, because I think the line is 3, 3.5. It might have been 4 with P.J. Washington, you know, if he was totally ready to go. But I mean, now you're getting the rumors with Houston, just not to transition too much of that game, but that Kelvin Sampson may be in line for the Arkansas job. Well, then that provides a distraction. You know, it's like, okay, we're finally in the Sweet 16, and I'm sure him and his staff are preparing hard for this game. They're taking this seriously. I mean, you're only a couple games away from the Final Four, but you never want that type of distraction this time of year. So I think you're going to start to see a little bit, and you may be already starting to see it, maybe see a little money on Kentucky in that game.
Yeah, we are starting to see that up from 2.5 to 3, just about market-wide out there on Kentucky. And I was kind of wondering when money was coming in here anyway, because Kentucky, the known commodity, we know the public has a lot more influence in March Madness than any other time of the year for college basketball. So I was kind of waiting on this. I know Houston's a good team. good record. You know, the American Athletic Conference was 24th in effective field goal percentage offense, which is not good at all. Very good defensive conference, not so great offensively. So I was kind of waiting for that line move to happen, maybe kind of waiting on Washington, I guess, is, you know, the reason why it hasn't happened yet. But, you know, Samson and that distraction, good point to make there. I don't mind combining games because I want to make sure that we've got some time to talk about the WGC match play event as well. But before we get to that, Virginia Tech and Duke. Duke 7-point favorite, some 7.5s out there at the more public shops, 144.5 the total for this one. I think that there's more than meets the eye for this game, or to this game. And I'm not really sure that a lot of public or novice bettors are going to realize that, but I want to get your take before I elaborate some more.
Well, I mean, I'm going to, you know, sound like I'm on the square side here, and I probably am going to be. And I actually do like Duke in this spot. And I know there's a lot of people I respect that have taken Virginia Tech, and they're certainly capable, even though they beat them without Zion Williamson, they still beat them in Blacksburg. And, you know, Virginia Tech has gotten Duke the last couple few years. In the regular season, they'd usually, like, split the season series. But they've proven they can beat this team, and that's why I think you're seeing the line go down a little bit. But I'm going to go, and I kind of like Duke here, and there's a couple reasons why. You know, the fact that they did beat this team is certainly going to – that they got beat by this team is certainly going to have Duke's focus, I think. And also the fact that of really the number one seeds, you know, Duke is the only one that I think has really gotten a scare in this tournament. And I think getting that scare from UCF, I mean, they were down 3 with the ball with 20 seconds to go. And if UCF converts that lob, they're up 6 with less than 2 minutes to go, and Duke's in real trouble. And, you know, maybe Duke got one or two favorable whistles down the stretch. I think the game was relatively evenly officiated. But, you know, when it comes to that, and when you're a team like Duke and you're getting everybody's best shot and everybody wants to see you lose except for fans of Duke or people that have money on the game, you know, and that's what happens. Like, I was in a book on Sunday, and, you know, once the Duke bettors knew that their 13.5 was way no good, they started to root for Central Florida because you want to root for the big upset. And I think when a team gets their scare like Duke has, you know, all of a sudden you see these players, and yeah, they've got the cash is waiting for them, and just a few months down the road, and they're going to get a boatload of cash, R.J. Barrett, especially R.J. Barrett and Zion Williamson. But those kids went to Duke to win a national championship. They could have went anywhere. And, you know, maybe it gets to a point where they're kind of talking with each other or talking with the coaches, like, dudes, we were almost out of here. We were almost going home getting ready to clean out our lockers on Monday or Tuesday. And, you know, the fact that we're still here and we got almost a reprieve or a second chance, I think even though I respect Virginia Tech and respect that they have Robinson back and Buzz Williams has been able to beat this team several times, you know, I think there is a potential for Duke to really lay out this team because I think you're going to see a more focused Duke here for sure.
I'll say this. I don't have a strong opinion on the side. I mean, I guess there's kind of a correlation to my favorite play on the game and the side because I like the under in this game quite a bit. You know, you've got a Virginia Tech team here that has forced the opposition into a lot of threes. 50.4% of the field goal attempts against the Hokies have been from three-point range. That's the second highest mark in the country. And when you look at, you know, their percentage of, you know, of two-pointers allowed at the rim, they're 11th best in the country, 27.7%. So, excuse me, they're going to force Duke to shoot from the outside. And that is not Duke's game at all, as we all know.
Right.
I mean, it's something that they did pretty well against UCF. And this is the reason why they're still standing, really, is because they had one of their better shooting performances of the season in that game. Now, whether or not Virginia Tech scores, I'm not sure. But I do know that they're going to make Duke uncomfortable offensively in the sense that, you know, Duke's going to have to take a lot of jump shots here in this game. Now, if they make them, they could boat race Virginia Tech, and it wouldn't surprise me at all. But I think that just the fact that Duke won't have as much success getting to the rim, maybe it will be different with Zion Williamson in this game. Maybe they will have a little bit more success. But the under is my favorite play here. And, again, you would think that would correlate to taking Virginia Tech plus the 7. But, you know, for the reasons that you mentioned, I'm not all that enthralled with either side here.
Yeah, and you brought up a great point, and that's, you know, one of the things that does give me pause on recommending Duke, even though I ultimately do. to Virginia Tech's defense, they're kind of, and I pointed this out earlier, I remember sending a tweet about it one time watching them, you know, kind of looking at their numbers. They're playing, you know, they've adopted a little bit where it's almost like they've adopted some of Virginia's defensive principles, you know, where they're not necessarily running a pure pack line, but they've adopted some of those principles. I mean, and I think, you know, it bore fruit. And, you know, when NC State, I think, I can't remember if it was 20 or 24, but they held NC State in the 20s, a team that can really score and is an up-tempo team that does a lot of pressure. Kevin Keith, of course, a Patino disciple. So, you know, to hold that team to that low of a score, I mean, maybe it was an outlier, but, man, you know that this team can absolutely defend. I do think having Zion is a big difference. And, I mean, a lot of times an injured player is overcompensated for in the line. I don't think Zion Williamson actually was. I think, you know, he is much more worth. Usually a starter might be worth 2-3 points. You know, he was worth 5 or 6 or maybe even more in some of these games. And, I mean, I agree with you on the under here because I think, you know, there is a proclivity this late in the season – you know, where you have a game and it starts out kind of fast, and you saw that a little bit with Iowa-Tennessee, even though it went over because of the overtime. See, a game that looks like a fast-paced game and there's just scoring early on, it slows to a crawl in the last few minutes and teams can't score. You saw that a little bit just in an NIT game with Creighton and TCU. I think it was like 30, the under was like 71.5 for the first half. It was 30-26 with a little over 5 minutes to go. So I had the under there, and I was like, oh, man, I'm cooked here. I'm done. And then all of a sudden I look at the halftime score as I'm driving home, and it's 33-30, and the game just totally slowed. So you will see that kind of in final minutes of halves here where a game could slow to a crawl, and I could definitely see that happening here.
All right, one more thing I want to talk about here. WGC match play event has already started. It starts on Wednesday here because they have to accommodate for so many rounds, the bracket style format, all that type of stuff. So we can't talk about overall picks to win this thing, although there will be in tournament running odds, especially with, you know, this bracket format. But this is a match play event. This is not a traditional stroke play event. So how does that change the handicap for you? Are you mostly just looking at, you know, matchups exclusively here?
Yeah, I did a lot less futures. I think I ended up playing 4 guys, you know, and that I mentioned on our long shot show last night, and they were John Rahm, Louis Oosthuizen, Ian Poulter, and Alexander Noren. And really, I was just taking, you know, basically on futures, I was just taking guys that have career really good records in match play. I mean, Ian Poulter, 41-17-5 career. When you include all the individual match play events, and then you include the individual matches in the Ryder Cup, Alex Noren, 17-7, even though he doesn't really come in on great form. A guy like Oosthuizen, 20-12-2. So, I mean, you know, just kind of looking for proven match play commodities. In the groups, I took, a lot more plus money guys because it is very rare, even though you've had guys like Dustin Johnson and Jason Day, you know, top-seeded players win this event, it is very rare that you're going to get in this format, you're going to get the top 16 seeds go through. So you're going to see guys. I mean, you had Bubba Watson and Kevin Kisner, and they were both, I think, seeded like in the 30s. They were not even the top seeds in their groups, and they were the guys in the final last year. So, you know, I looked at a little bit more groups. I'll do a little bit more matchups. It's not your typical stroke play event where I can do, you know, 6, 7, 8 futures at various prices, you know, from then the maybe a couple 20-1 guys to all the way up to a triple digit to one. So, I mean, so that kind of was my approach here a little bit. And I think, you know, there is some value, and you saw some matchups in the first round where you get these guys to the moon where it is very hard to take them. I mean, when you're seeing guys like Justin Thomas and Molinari, of course, him and Fleetwood were amazing in the Ryder Cup in Paris last year. You know, you're paying premiums to take those guys. And, I mean, 3 matches in 3 days, they're guaranteed that they may drop one. So it's worth taking a shot on some of these dogs, you know, against Dustin Johnson, because these guys are going to be geared to play these top guys, you know, head to head. And when you got a chance, I mean, you used to see it all the time with Tiger. You know, when you got a chance to play Dustin Johnson, you got a chance to play a Justin Thomas or a Brooks Koepka or somebody like that. You know, these guys are going to get up to that because, I mean, that's, you know, a test for them if you're ranked in the 40s or the 50s in the official world golf rankings. You know, that's a chance to prove that, hey, I belong with some of the top players. So, you know, that's a lot of what I look at. You know, it's a different event because obviously the groups get adjusted, and I actually preferred the one, the knockout, because it made it a shorter event. I actually preferred the, you know, one and done type of format here rather than the round robin, because I think, you know, if you're going to get to the final four in this, if you lose in the semifinals, you're going to play a consolation match. You got to play seven matches, and like, you know, you get guaranteed three, and then you're going to play two on Saturday in the 16 in the round of eight. And then you're going to play two on Sunday in the semis and in the finals and consolation match. So it's like, you know, that is a lot. And I talked about this with our guest Will Gray on Long Shots last night from Golf Channel. And he and I were both very surprised to see 61 of the top 64 players play in this event. I mean, the only guys that really skipped it were Ricky Fowler and Adam Scott. I thought you'd have many more considering we're only 2 weeks out from Augusta.
Yeah, I thought so, too. And, you know, what was interesting was yesterday I did Dave Koken's Las Vegas Sportsline show with Ralph Michaels. And, you know, he has Jeff Sherman on every week. And, I mean, Jeff Sherman's at Golf Odds on Twitter. So, you know, obviously it's a guy that certainly knows what he's talking about in the golf market. And I asked him about Alex Noren. And I know that you mentioned he's on your card. He's 10-2 in his career here at Austin Country Club since they moved this event there in 2016. And I asked him, I said, you know, Alex Noren, not a guy in good recent form, but a good match play player and also a very good match play guy right here at this course. So I asked, you know, what, how you sort of weigh the recent form versus, you know, maybe an event that sets up well for a guy. And he said, you know, look, based on the power ratings, we have Alex Noren's like a 125-1 guy, but we've got him listed at 80-1. So that just sort of skew how you want to handicap this event, because some guys are just simply more comfortable in that match play type of environment, you know, because it, you know, it's something that I think we probably gravitate towards European players and those things more than anything, because there's a couple more match play events over there. And, you know, we always think about the Ryder Cup and President's Cup and all that. But I thought it was just interesting that, you know, it necessitated such a big difference in price just simply because a guy, you know, really plays better in that format and is kind of a horse for course for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, that's kind of why I went with more proven commodities in match play in this event with a guy like Poulter, who hasn't won this year, but his ball striking statistics have been off the charts. And he's had a lot of good finishes, both here on the stateside, you know, and in, was third in the WGC Mexico, actually, I believe. But yeah, he was third, but had a lot of top three, top six finishes. Over in Europe, had a three-week stretch, I think, where he's third, second, third, or third, sixth, third. So, I mean, guys that their ball striking is just good. And, you know, some of this, there's so many interesting angles with the match play. We actually brought up Jordan Spieth in the discussion last night. He's making a lot of bogeys right now. Doesn't always hurt you in match play because it costs you one hole, but he's still making a lot of birdies. I mean, yeah, he might make five or six bogeys, but he's making six birdies too. So, I mean, birdies are going to win you holes in match play. So he wasn't a guy, obviously, any of us took this Spieth with his recent form, but that's those are different things because it is such a different structure. You got to look at things like that, you know, where, okay, if a guy makes a mistake, it's only going to cost him one hole, whereas in a stroke play event, you know, triple bogey, and then all of a sudden you're struggling to make the cut.
Wes Reynolds is working a follow on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Wes, appreciate the time as always, man. I appreciate your time throughout the season here. Also, we'll see if we can get you on for some one-off segments here over the summertime. But with the format change next week, the last regular appearance for you here for this season for football and basketball. So thank you so much for joining me week after week, man. It's been a pleasure as always, and talk to you again real soon.
Hey, Adam, thank you always for the time, man. You've always been very good to me, and you know, good luck with your baseball guide. And I know you're doing a lot of media appearances, and I'm glad that people are recognizing your work after for all these years that and the good content you guys have been putting out.
Thank you so much, Wes. Appreciate it, man. Take care. There you go. There's Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter. Great for the golf breakdowns here throughout the football and the basketball seasons. And then, of course, they're talking football and basketball with us as well. All right, coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio will actually be the Bettors Box, my MLB betting podcast first episode for the 2019 season. Very much looking forward to that. Then on Friday, we'll chat Friday's Sweet 16 games and what we know for the Elite Eight with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.